the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We're the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils, so keep it tuned right here in the studio with Sam the Animal Steel and Shelley Wright, and it's Christmas time. I'm one of these people who's, it's a slow burn to Christmas. Even when my wife's been doing a lot of cooking and the kids have been bouncing off the walls and sneaking over there and shaking presents from under the tree. Were you one of these sort of sneaky kids, Sam, that wanted to investigate the packages before their time?
I think there was a phase in there at some point where I thought that would be cool, you know, to like try to, you know, do the little shake, you know, like the allowed, like feel, shake, listen, mm-hmm. you know, the slide. And a lot of times they would try to fool me by, you know, getting different sized boxes.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of times they would just keep them in their closet or whatever until Christmas morning. So I wouldn't even know that it was going to be there.
One time my dad got me a BB gun, a Red Ryder. You'll shoot your eye out. Yeah. My dad bought me a BB gun, and he wrapped it up with a hoe behind it, like a garden hoe,
oh.
sticking out. So the end of the hoe and the hoe handle were actually sticking out of the wrapping paper, and the message on the package said, ho, 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 from Santa.
Oh, that's funny.
We grew up on a farm, people, so maybe that makes the humor a little more understandable.
So you
maybe I should have prefaced it by saying that we grew up on a farm.
A utilitarian gift.
Yeah, here you go. But, yeah, that was my dad's Christmas humor, ho, ho, ho. But it was a BB gun in there, so, yeah, that was good. BB guns are a lot of fun if you've got a good place for a BB gun. In urban areas, I think BB guns not so good, and my kids aren't listening, so I can go ahead and say it. Jesse's getting a Nerf gun.
Woo-hoo!
This year, among other things, but Jesse's getting a Nerf gun this year. Nerf was so much fun. We had like the Nerf rocket launchers. You slam your fist down on the Nerf rocket launcher and see how far you can send those suckers. Christmas. Yeah, it's all about the toys and joys of Christmas.
I remember we had this one that I wish we still had now. It was the clown head that you hooked up to the hose.
Yeah.
And so then you would turn on the hose and it would shoot a stream out of the top of the clown's head, thus making the clown's hat shoot up in the air. And then you would run and jump through the water stream. And the hat would sometimes stay back on the stream, and, like, sometimes it would fall off. And, like, so it was like a Florida, you know, get cooled down, like, running through the yard, jumping through this clown head stream. So I took it, and I turned it on very little. So it was just barely bubbling. And I told my little sister it was a water fountain. And and she went over to take a sip, and I'd crank that bad boy up, and it shot her right in the
water
face.
Water up the nose. Oh,
yeah,
Sam.
I used to do bad things to my sisters.
Oh, Christmas joys. What are some of your favorite Christmas memories from childhood, Shelley?
I just loved Christmas. It was so much fun at my house. It was a big, big affair because, you know, we didn't go on vacations or anything. So that was our great big time of the year. And as far as shaking presents, that was my mom's domain. She would always pick up presents and shake them and do the little... She still does that. I mean, she didn't grow out of that. Now, I always knew what was in the packages.
You have to put, like, fragile stickers on some of the packages so she won't shake them up.
But I tried to stay away from the gifts because if I got too close, I knew what was in there. So it was hardly ever a surprise for me. I already knew what was in them.
Oh,
so.
Your psychometry. If you touch the package, you can read what's inside.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like Christopher Walken in Dead Zone? Like, Shelly touches the package. She's like, ah! And she sees the...
Without the sound effects. Yeah.
I like fruitcake. I want to go on record saying that I like fruitcake.
Congratulations,
my
Aunt.
Dad does too.
Yeah, I do. I think
he's
that,
not ashamed.
That's one of those things for, about Christmas that I look forward to. Good fruitcake. I mean, a Claxton fruitcake, a fresh Claxton fruitcake is not bad, but my mother fashioned fruitcakes around Christmas time, and I enjoy a good fruitcake. People kind of make fun of them, using them for doorstops, etc., whatever, and they're like the joke. They're like the ugly Christmas sweater of Christmas food, but
how Vance,
I enjoy a good fruitcake.
It's a little-known fact, that's how Vance got his nickname, Vance Fruitcake Pollock, is due to his love of fruitcake.
That's exactly where it came from. I sort of associate Christmas of my childhood with music and movies. I mean, because it seems like movies and music were gifts that, well, they were things that I just didn't get to buy all the time. My family didn't spend a lot of money on records or going to the movies or particularly T-shirts. Sam, you're still a T-shirt guy. As
oh, yeah.
a kid, I look back at pictures of me every Christmas, and I'm like, damn, I got some cool T-shirts that year. Because I'll be like styling in my King Kong, 1977 King Kong
nice.
Motion picture T-shirt. Or, you know, Spider-Man T-shirt or Rolling Stones. I was like 12 years old, and I got like the three-quarter sleeve
nice.
Rolling Stone jersey with the, you know, the big tongue logo on it.
Love the three-quarter sleeve.
Yeah. So, yeah, T-shirts and music. I remember I got KTEL Rock 80 for Christmas. KTEL Rock 80 featuring the Ramones. Rock and Roll Radio's on there. Gary Newman Cars is on there. Some of the greatest
the songs that scream Christmas.
And very influential rock songs. It just so happened to get the album at Christmas time.
Okay, know? Here's one for you. You know, like you got Christmas movies. You got like, you know, obviously your Christmas Vacation. That's always a good one. When we were really young, remember the Herdmans? It was like the best Christmas pageant ever.
No.
Oh yeah, I
they
was
were like
in
the
that
bad
play.
Kids in church. That was a good one. But here's one: do you consider Die Hard to be a Christmas movie?
Yeah,
I can see that.
Yeah.
I haven't traditionally gone back and watched Die Hard around Christmas time, but now that you mention it, yes, Die Hard is
totally
a Christmas movie.
And the trials and tribulations of Christmas, but with, you know, bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fighting for his wife, Holly Gennaro. You know, it's all cold. It's snowy.
Christmas party.
Yeah, Christmas party gone wrong.
We got to keep it spooky. Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. Danny Elfman soundtrack. Good stuff. I'm all about Nightmare Before Christmas.
That was one of my very first tapes was the Danny Elfman like all his themes from like Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawing a blank now, but
yeah, a lot of them.
A lot. Batman.
Yeah, exactly. I was a Boingo fan. I was an Oingo Boingo fan. Oingo Boingo and fruitcake. The two things I love.
I'm still amazed. You guys were actually in Christmas photographs. Really?
Yes.
Okay. Because at my house, and I'm talking about Grandma's house where we all went, all of the family went to open up gifts, there are no pictures of the family. Any picture that was ever taken at Christmas was of the table and the food.
Oh, yeah.
But
those
there are
two.
No people. No people.
Mm-hmm. That's just weird, Jill.
Uh-huh. It's very weird.
We always had the little, the 110, you know, Kodak camera,
mm-hmm.
that the pictures are all very orange and red toned by now. I don't think they're faded. I think that was just the color palette that they used for that cheap, you know, portable, those film cartridges in those days was just red. But yeah, we always had those snapshots. We've got a lot of those candid living room photos of the kids gathered around the Christmas tree, the old TV set in the corner, and yeah, piles of wrapping. And Christmas was this way in my house. Mom or whoever Santa's elves were would pack all those presents under the Christmas tree like Christmas Eve night, you know. So maybe there were a 10 or a dozen gifts under the Christmas tree on Christmas Eve, but when you woke up Christmas morning, bam.
See,
they
was,
had all the presents had arrived overnight.
And you know, like when you're a kid, you're like so excited about, you know, like, and you're waking up before mom and dad. Then, like, fast forward years later, when, you know, I'm not living at home and my sisters are living in other states, and, you know, but they might be home for Christmas with their kids. And, you know, those kids are now little. And so they're getting up at the butt crack of dawn and they're all like, where's Uncle Sammy? Uncle Sammy ain't doing nothing until afternoon, okay? So y'all don't need Uncle Sammy there to open up anything. Just open up the presents. I'll mosey on in around lunch. But, like, you get older, you're just like, you care less and less. It's like my parents now, they're like, hey, you need anything? I'm like, just help me out if my car breaks down. You know, like, you know, I don't need any presents or anything. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I know.
It is fun to give if you find a good gift that you know somebody's going to like. But it sucks to try to find a gift and you're like, oh, hey.
Oh, we bypass that in my house. It's always, ooh, I found this really great thing. Hey, you want to give this to me for Christmas?
See, that's, so, yeah, that happens a lot. But
pre-bought. You know you're going to love it.
But it takes the fun out. I mean, that's the whole point, is to try to surprise somebody with something good.
Like, fun picking it out.
You could buy it yourself.
Yeah, but then I have to use my own real money. What's the fun in that?
Candles are a big part of Christmas in my household. I think my Scandinavian wife, my wife from Iceland, kind of brought the candle culture back to Christmas. I don't remember a lot of candles, maybe a few candles around Christmas time growing up. But now it's like candle mania.
Candle mania.
Around the Pollock household.
Pollock candle mania.
Featuring fruitcake
and Oingo Boingo. Boingo.
We'll be right back with more Christmas goodness after this break. Speaking of strange. Strange for Christmas. What's coming down your chimney this year? You never know. We had a couple of interesting guests last week in here. Our good friends Christian and Tiny were talking about cryptids here in the mountains. If you didn't catch that one, you got to go back to the website, speakingofstrange.com, and check out the podcast. Fun show. I enjoyed having those guys. And what do you think, Shell?
Oh, they were a lot of fun. They really were.
Convincing. I mean, to hear Christian talk about the this wolf man or this devil dog that he met nearby. Well, yeah, it's kind of frightening. Makes me think twice before wandering out into the woods alone at night.
Well, it does. And I mean, they both have stories that are incredible. Anybody else, you're like, I don't know about that. But they are very believable people. And they're very, you know what I mean? I mean, you don't doubt them. You know that this happened to them.
Right. Yeah, very, very genuine, sincere accounts. Last week's episode with Christian and Tiny in here, you got to go back and check those out in the podcast archives from speakingofstrange.com. Also, stay apprised of what JPW, that is Joshua P. Warren himself, is doing at joshuapwarren.com. Is there a period after the P?
No.
joshuapwarren.com. And hauntedasheville.com. You always want to book a tour at Haunted Asheville. You know what would be a cool gift for a friend? Last minute gift idea? A Haunted Asheville tour. Go to hauntedasheville.com and book them a tour. Yeah. If you haven't been on the tour in a while, it's time to go back, because now you get access to the new and improved Joshua P. Warren Mystery Museum. Looks great down there, doesn't it, Shelley?
Oh, it really does. It does.
There's so much. I mean, it's concentrated. I'll put it that way. It takes up less space than it did now, but it's like you stand in the aisles of the Joshua P. Warren Mystery Museum, and the senses, the mind is just overwhelmed by all this oddness, all this strangeness. And Josh was auctioning off a few of the items from it. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Josh was putting some unique items from his collection out there on eBay a while back. I thought that the green pea soup signed by the
Linda
chick from Linda Blair from The Exorcist signed a can of green pea soup. I thought that was a nice collector's item.
They got a nice Linda Blair Exorcist doll, like in the adult toy category at the Toys R Us. It's like $40 or $50. It's like a pretty realistic. I was like, this is pretty cool, but I don't really need like a demon child in my house. You know, not for $50 or whatever.
No, it's probably not.
It's very realistic.
The best value. In recent years, and Sam, I'm not gonna broach this. I mean, because you warned me not to, but I'm gonna throw it out there because everybody's talking about it. And I, in the last few years with my kids, I associate Christmas with Star Wars. My youngest one is a Star Wars junkie. From the time he was 2 or 3 years old, he wanted to watch those movies over and over and over and played with all the toys. He's just got like a box full of action figures and stuff like that. Love Star Wars. And every year, Sylvan and I go to the new Star Wars movie as Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Oh.
Well, not in costume. We just smuggle concessions
I'm confused.
You don't get it?
No.
Han Solo and Chewbacca were smugglers, so my son Sylvan and I go to the Star Wars movie.
Never much of a Star Wars.
And we smuggle.
Never much of a Star Wars fan.
We smuggle like boxed candies, theater boxes from Walgreens, where you can get them for 99 cents
of
instead of $3 at the... Yeah.
That
went over Sam's head. Maybe somebody out there got that.
They did.
Please. I thought it was pretty funny. I've posted it on Facebook and got likes before. Isn't that the litmus test of whether something's funny? People liked it on Facebook. I don't know.
If you care about those things.
I can dumb things down. I can drop some garbage on Facebook that's been shared, 1,000 times and get more likes than something that I very tediously prepared. But that's why Speaking of Strange is the tediously prepared that is only liked by the few. I think that the attention span that favors the stupid gifts on Facebook are not the ones who will appreciate the gift of knowledge that we bestow on you week in, week out here at Speaking of Strange. And too strange to even make up. I will say this, very mild spoiler alert, because I'm not going to go specific here. Spoiler alert, new Star Wars movie. If you haven't seen it, I don't think this is going to hurt you. But I am going to say this, a very, very popular psychic phenomena that has an important part to play in the new Star Wars movie, bilocation. AKA out of body experience, AKA astral projection, sometimes associated with remote viewing, etc. People know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen the movie, I don't think I just ruined anything for you. But I watched this movie and I thought, they just dropped this on viewers without a whole lot of backstory or explanation or anything like that, and just assumed that they were familiar with it or would like astral projection. Do you think that's a concept that most people are comfortable with or familiar with?
No.
I'm not even that familiar with it, really.
Well, here's Christmas tie-in part two of my exposition this hour. Every Christmas, I send a few Christmas cards. A lot of people don't send analog, you know, organic, or, you know, physical Christmas cards anymore. They think e-cards are enough. But I believe in sending out Christmas photographs of the kids, especially for the elderly widows in the family. I say that the people who appreciate them most are my aunts and cousins and some of the older folks who don't do the internet. But the next time I go over to their house, guess what? They're going to have that Christmas picture of my boys under a magnet up on the fridge. I appreciate that. I sending Christmas cards out, and we get a few back. I mean, we don't get more than maybe a dozen or so Christmas cards back. But I always get Christmas cards in recent years from the grandchildren of a famous Asheville architect from the turn of the last century. His name was Arthur J. Wills. I'm going to pass this lovely photo around. I want you to see this, because Arthur J. Wills' grandson, Jim Wills, after I looked him up a few years ago, he sent me the original architectural drawing of a house that was on Woodfin Street. You know where Woodfin Street is downtown. Built about 1892. For Elliot Hazard. And you'll see his name right down there at the bottom, designed by Arthur J. Wills. Is that not just a fabulous looking house?
I want it.
It later became Biggs Sanitarium. Dr. Biggs opened his sanitarium there in the early 1900s, say until about 1912 or so. It was the Biggs Sanitarium.
It's not a house for very long then.
No, for maybe a decade, Elliot Hazard owned the house. Elliot Hazard was the brother of Captain Miles Hazard that built the Beaumont House up on Bowcatcher. So the Hazard family, and there's still a Hazard Street up there in that neighborhood off of MLK.
Can I see it?
Yeah,
I guess.
Pass it over there to Sam. I think it's a very lovely, lovely home. Very lovely example of Arthur J. Wills' stuff. And see, I got interested in him because of his turn-of-the-century architecture. And as I started looking closer at the life of Arthur J. Wills, I found a connection to some other very interesting things that I think is going to be right up, speaking of strange listeners' alley. The Strange Case of Arthur J. Wills here on Speaking of Strange when we come back from this break.
magic in the air. The sleigh bells are ringing and the carolers are singing while the air raid sirens blare. It's Christmas at Ground Zero. The button has been pressed. The radio just let us know that this is not a test. Everywhere the atom bombs are dropping, it's the end of all humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. It's Christmas at Ground Zero. There's panic in the crowd. We can dodge debris while we trim the tree underneath a mushroom cloud.
Only a few hours away now. I'm sure you're all looking forward to it as much as we are.
You might hear some reindeer on your rooftop or Jack Frost on your windowsill, but if someone's climbing down your chimney, you better load your gun and shoot to kill. Oh, it's Christmas at Ground Zero, and if the radiation level's okay, I'll go out with you and see all the new mutations on New Year's Day.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of strange, Christmas, as only Weird Al can do it. Christmas at Ground Zero. Classic, Sammy. Good pick. Every now and then we let Sam pick the bumpers, and that one's a good one. Well, I didn't have any Christmas music.
You know,
it's
Christmassy.
Like it's a Christmas show. Why don't you have Christmas music instead of just
makes sense.
Surf punk garage.
Outros. But,
yeah. Yep. I was going to tell you guys a little more about this architect, Arthur John Wills. Okay, it starts out dry historical research. Honestly, the only reason I'm interested in this guy is because a couple of his civic buildings, show up in all these old photographs of downtown Asheville. And one is the City Market, Fire Department, and City Hall, which sat at the back of Pack Square, right in front of where the current Jackson building is. This building is from Thomas Wolfe's childhood. I mean, you can almost imagine the descriptions of this building looking at photographs and reading Thomas Wolfe's works. They're right there because Thomas Wolfe's dad's monument shop, tombstone shop, was right where the Jackson building is now. So when he was a child playing out in front of his father's monument shop at the fountains on Pack Square, he was right there in front of this big city hall that was designed by Arthur J. Wills. And when I started looking for information on Arthur J. Wills, they didn't have a date of death. They didn't have any photographs, in the Asheville in the Pack Library, North Carolina room. It was like this guy did business here during the 1890s, must have left sometime, shortly after the turn of the century and vamooshed. You know, we don't have anything else on this guy. It was like a fascinating guy. Looking at his contributions, the Buck Scholes House, Bill Nye, not the science guy, but Bill Nye, the editorialist, the commentator, he was a very famous writer and columnist in the late 1800s, Bill Nye. He was from out there at Fletcher, around Fletcher, and his home at Buck Shoal was designed and built by Arthur J. Wills. I'm looking at the plan of this hazard house, and it's just
amazing. He designed the Montford School, later William Randolph Elementary. He designed the old First Baptist Church. Now the First Baptist Church is what you imagine with a copper dome just this side, you know, downtown side of the tunnel as you're coming into Asheville. I realize there are people out in the world listening online that have never been to Asheville. You need to come here because it's a very beautiful city. You don't need to stay, but you need to come for a visit and take the Haunted Asheville tour. We'll show you some of the former locations of these buildings because, you see, the thing is, timing is everything. Arthur J. Wills designed and constructed these lovely buildings in the 1890s, and by the 1820s, they were still such financial boom years, but the attitude was one of opulence, grandeur, excess, even, so that they were demolishing these fine buildings for bigger, not necessarily better, but bigger buildings, so that the city hall, only, you know, 25, 30 years old, was demolished for the current City of Asheville building. But anyway, nonetheless, I start looking deeper into the life of Arthur J. Wills, civil engineer and architect, and I find a citation that I assume has to be the same guy in this book, The Case for Astral Projection, Hallucination or Reality. Shelley, the author of this book, one Sylvan Muldoon. And you recognize that name Sylvan anywhere?
Yes, I do believe that your son's name is Sylvan.
Yeah, named in part by the my son Sylvan, named in part after the astral projection pioneer Sylvan Muldoon. And this is a rare first edition with dust jacket of The Case for Astral Projection, Hallucination or Reality, 1936, is it? I think it's a 1936 first edition. Beautiful book I have in my library here. I have to brag on my library once in a while. Tediously acquired. Inside the front dust jacket flap, that apparition you saw, that fleeting glimpse of a disembodied being which disturbed you for an instant last night, a week ago, a year ago, which you were perhaps ashamed of mentioning, may not have been a hallucination. More than likely, it was the actual projected spiritual body of a living person. This is the contention of Sylvan Muldoon, the most renowned authority among psychical researchers of modern times, in his new and brilliant contribution to the literature on the subject, The Case for Astral Projection. And then we turn back to page 138 because, you know, we are 138. Learns to project voluntarily. In his first letter to me, Sylvan Muldoon writes, dated August 11th, 1929, Mr. Arthur J. Wills, an architect and civil engineer of Chicago, Illinois, writes, all of my experiences were involuntary, though I tried voluntary projection in ignorance of how to go about it. On one occasion at a dentist's office, without anesthetic, as he drilled into my tooth, the pain became so acute that I actually lost myself. Suddenly, I found myself looking over the dentist's shoulder into my own mouth. Arthur J. Wills, in his letters to Sylvan Muldoon, communicated here in The Case for Astral Projection, they get quite strange. He says now in a letter, December 15th, 1929, that I have experienced projection voluntarily of late. I awake in the astral body fully conscious, but after the body is projected and I do not experience the intermediate stages of which you speak, if I think emotionally of my physical self while out, I am instantly back into it again as a rule. Have done things while projected which would be physically impossible, such as defying gravity and being suspended in midair. Once I walked down a corridor where scene after scene of history passed in front of my eyes. When, while projected at a great height, I realize there is no physical support under me, I sometimes have a feeling of nausea. If this realization of non-support comes slowly so that I can reason that the sensation is merely an attribute of the physical body apart from me, the real entity, I can overcome it and retain passivity. astral projection, yes, it's bilocation, the thought that our consciousness, even our sentience, can be alert, acute, and what's a good word for it? Anyway, functional outside of our physical body. Have you ever had something that you would think of as more than just a dream? Because that's the first thing most people try and liken to. Well, is it anything like a lucid dream or a very vivid dream? And people who project say it's so much more than that, that they are just as alert, that it's such a detailed sort of experience. And as the liner notes say, in more sensational cases, people would even project to a distant location and be observed by other people. Arthur J. Wills talks about projecting from here in the U.S. to England, where his sister saw him in her house, and she observed him in the house much as he observed situations in her house while he was, you know, for all intents and purposes, asleep or in trance here in the U.S. Have you had experiences with astral projection, Shelley?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. One time in particular, it was just something that didn't seem like any big deal to me. I was living at the haunted tuberculosis sanatorium, and I remember I was standing at my bedroom window looking out. I was looking at this full moon, and it was beautiful. And then I just turned around, and I looked in my bed, and there I was laying asleep in my bed. And I was perfectly okay with it. I wasn't freaked out, and I just turned back around and kept watching out the window.
That is a textbook example of the most basic form of astral projection. You turn and recognize your own body asleep in the bed. Very strange, but we'll touch a little more on the details of the life of Arthur J. Wills, architect, when we come back from this break. Speaking of strange... Speaking of strange, can't do Christmas without King Diamond. When I think Christmas, I always think King Diamond. If you don't have any Christmas villains, last year I kind of bemoaned the fact that America has no Christmas villains. Well, King Diamond. We can use King Diamond. His makeup is pretty amazing, and he has an IQ of 172.
Something like that.
So the YouTube comments say.
So it must be true.
Must be true. Well, we find out that this architect who built so many of these famous municipal buildings long gone, but famous around the turn of the last century, that he had corresponded with astral projection pioneer and author Sylvan Muldoon. So I have to look a little bit closer and find out that indeed Arthur Wills, who designed all these old Asheville buildings, had actually written his memoirs in 1942. This is a copy of the Arthur J. Wills memoirs entitled Life, Now and Forever, a comprehensive work on every aspect of psychic science and spiritualism, deals with healing, how to sit, ectoplasm, materialization, apports, levitation, voices from trumpet and independent, clairvoyance, psychic photography, auras, rays, psychometry, telepathy, prevision, speaking in tongues, astral projection, etc.
Wow. And
by the man who designed some of the most prominent buildings on Asheville skyline 100 years ago.
And the cover is so boring.
It is kind of bland, but that's the dust jacket. They could have done it a little neater. I kind of like the Sylvan Muldoon cover with like the angel or phantom or whatever there. You're right. Arthur J. Wills' book company did a boring dust jacket, but it's rare and it's in plastic. And I don't even take this one out of the plastic. I've got a UK edition of that I scanned. It's up on archive.org for those familiar with archive.org. If you look for the title Life Now and Forever by Arthur J. Wills, you'll find it in its entirety. It's in the public domain now, and it contains some very fascinating memoirs about the man who, built the Asheville skyline of 100 years ago. Like I say, almost forgotten now. So strange how I found him looking from a completely sensible, concrete, non-spiritual direction. It's almost as if, even if I'm not trying to find weird phantoms, I end up finding them anyway because they're everywhere. They lurk in all the corners. Building, the home you designed on Woodfin Street, when I was doing some research on that one, I found the address in about 1904 was occupied by this lady, Evelyn Means, 104 Woodfin Street, Asheville. Evelyn Means. And you'll see there, Shelley, that this is from the directory of the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research.
Really?
Yeah, interesting. And you'll see some fascinating entries there. But you see that entry for Evelyn Means that I kind of boxed in down there? 104 Woodfin Street, Asheville. I followed Evelyn Means down kind of a tragic trail. She ended up in Butler Hospital for the Insane and spent something like 30 years there. Butler Hospital for the Insane was in Providence, Rhode Island. And just a couple weeks ago, I was going back over my notes for Evelyn Means, and I thought, you know, Butler Hospital, I had just been reading a biography of H.P. Lovecraft, and Butler Hospital loomed large because his mother and father both died in Butler Hospital for the Insane. H.P. Lovecraft's father died when he was just a child. Probably his dad had syphilis. That's what historians and extant records suggest, that his father had gone insane with syphilis. But anyway, his mother, Sarah Lovecraft, also died in Butler Hospital. And I got to thinking, did Sarah Lovecraft and Evelyn Means spend time at Butler Hospital for the Insane at the same time? And look here, Shelley. Here is a page from the 1920 census for Rhode Island, Providence. Butler Hospital for the Insane. And look at these two names. Line 16, Sarah S. Lovecraft. That's H.P. Lovecraft's mother. And down here, line 22, that's our girl from from Asheville, Evelyn B. Means.
Yeah.
So I just found that quite eerie that two names so familiar out of the millions and millions of people in this country would have died in the same mental hospital. Creepy. The sort of twists and turns this sort of research takes. It's Speaking of Strange, Merry Christmas, everyone. The Dark 30 is going to, bring you a raunchy one. Stick around if you dare.